Welcome back to Preferred Company, Zane Busby. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Good to be back.
We're happy to have you back. Joel, say hello to Zane.
Zane, good morning to you. Okay. Zane, I have been fascinated since the last time you were here with the Mitzvah Project. I will disclose to the audience that Marianne and I personally donated to your organization. My company has donated to the Mitzvah Project. I was mesmerized by your story the last time you were here. Please tell it again.
Well, it's the Survivor Mitzvah Project, and it's an urgent humanitarian effort to make sure that no Holocaust survivors in Eastern Europe who have experienced the darkest days of human history will ever suffer again or be hungry or neglected or forgotten. Because right now there's a crisis with Holocaust survivors because in their 80s and 90s, without communities, without families, most of them are sole survivors of the Nazi horror. They're just struggling to get by, and they're in need of food, medicine, heat, and shelter, and that's what we do.
Aren't these people entitled to German reparations?
Some of them are and some of them aren't. It's very difficult to get reparations funds, especially if you're in Eastern Europe. Germany has been paying handsomely, and they pay all the time, but sometimes the organizations distribute the funds.
If I can correct you, well, I don't want to say correct you. I'm going to add my 2 cents. They can't pay handsomely enough.
There is money for survivors. It's just getting it that's really, really difficult.
I'm sure of that.
So there's no one advocating for them over there. They don't have computers. They're elderly. And there's just, you know, some of them have been waiting for 15, 20 years for that one-time payment of maybe, you know, 1,000 euros or 2,000 euros. So many people don't get anything, especially if they're in remote villages. Many people have once gotten something, but maybe that was, you know, 20 years ago or 10 years ago, and it certainly isn't helping now. And many people, like I say, don't get anything. So whatever it is, it's not enough for food, medicine, heat, and shelter.
I have told people how fascinated I am with your story because I do want them to donate. And right now I'm doing it on the air. please tell us the story again as to how the Mitzvah Project ever came to be.
Well, the Survivor Mitzvah Project started totally by accident. See, I'm a comedy director. I was an actress first, and I direct sitcoms. And one year, I took a break from directing sitcoms, and instead of going to Hawaii on vacation, I went to Eastern Europe to visit the birthplaces of my grandparents. I knew all of my grandparents. They came over to this country during the Great Immigration. I think the last one came in about 1920. So they got out. But, you know, sometimes they would talk about where they came from, and I was just interested in seeing, you know, what were these little villages they were talking about? So I decided to take 2 weeks and go. And as soon as I crossed the border into Belarus, my first trip was Belarus and Lithuania, it was truly like going back in time 100 years or so. There was no cars. There were no restaurants. There were little wooden houses all leaning to the side. There were remnants of war everywhere, bullet holes on all the facades, empty half-burned synagogues. And the landscape was truly from another world. And there I met Holocaust survivors living in these tiny places on the back roads. And it really made the period of the Holocaust seem so close to me because there I was walking down the same streets, the same crooked little, you know, byways, crossing the same rivers, going through the same forests where hundreds hid and thousands were murdered. And I found these survivors, and they were old people, like on their hands and knees, digging up potatoes from the ground so they'd have a winter food supply. Because in the villages, you know, they were used to growing their own food, but when you're 80 or 90, that becomes very hard to plant, grow, and harvest. And most of them are totally alone. So they didn't have anything. And their dwellings were made of straw and mud bricks, which means be repaired after rains and things like that because they don't last. But, you know, it had been years since they were able to do that. So they were really in desperate need. And I didn't know how to communicate with them. Thank goodness I had a translator. But I just yelled out when I would see these people, Shalom Aleichem, because that's all I knew how to say, you know, that I come in peace, because these people really hadn't had a really good history of strangers knocking on their doors, and I didn't want them to be afraid. And they would just turn around with a big smile and look at me and then come over and hug me and kiss me as if I was their granddaughter. And we went into their huts, and I would ask them questions through the interpreter, like, what happened to you? Why are you still here? You know, how did you... What were your dreams and hopes before the war? You know, what happened to your family? And the stories were absolutely amazing. And when I came back to the United States and started working again, I just went on the internet thinking, oh, there's got to be a million charities doing this. I will just give them the names of these people, and I'll donate to that charity. But there aren't any charities giving direct and continuous financial aid to these people. So I started one. And it started with 8 survivors, and now it's up to 2,000 survivors in 8 countries.
Wow.
Now, listen, friends, if you go on the internet, go to the Survivor Mitzvah Project, Zane, that, first of all, this website is absolutely, if you can use the word beautiful, it's beautiful, especially the photos. There's a montage, and it's just the people's faces. You can just see in their faces what they have gone through their whole lives and how they live now.
Right. It's truly mind-boggling. And what's really amazing about these people is that they aren't bitter. They're very much positive people, the survivors. They've survived so much already that they really are hoping for a better world for everybody. You know, they aren't bitter and stuck in the past at all, but they certainly remember it vividly. But they are, to a person, some of the most positive people I've ever met, especially in the face of such enormous adversity.
Zane, besides Lithuania, what countries do these survivors live in?
Estonia, Belarus, Lithuania, Latvia, Slovakia, Moldova, Ukraine, and parts of Russia.
Wow. And how is it that these monies are, if these people can't get monies via the internet or the way the rest of the survivors in the world, whether it be the United States, Israel, or any other more civilized country, how is it that you're able to get money to them?
Well, that's the big question, isn't it? I truly believe that if you set your mind to do something, you can do it. I mean, it's just a question of going there, going, searching out people, going through the back roads and finding these little villages and finding people, and one person leads you to another, and then you find more. It's not impossible. I mean, you know, there are big organizations that have hundreds of employees that could do this, but, you know, we're doing it like person by person. We went to Belarus and Lithuania last year because we go on emergency aid expeditions, and we also... to visit people we've been supporting for years, and we also find new people that are out there that we didn't even know existed at the same time, and then bring them into the project. So there's always an opportunity to find these people if you just look, you know, they're not hiding.
I guess I didn't ask the question well. My question is you're in Los Angeles, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so I donate from New Jersey. I have been sending checks regularly.
Right. Thank you so much.
No, thank you so much for what you're doing. My question to you is this. How do you get cash in their hands?
Oh, how do you get the money to them? There's a number of ways. In certain countries, it's sporadic in certain countries, but in, say, Lithuania, Latvia, and Estonia, the Baltic countries, you can use American checks now, which makes life so much easier. So you can write a check to their name. They don't have to have a bank account because many of these people don't have a bank account because during perestroika, the bank seized all their funds, so they kind of don't trust the banks. But they can go there. It may take 2 weeks to a month, but they will get the money. And so those are those countries. In countries where you can't use an American check anymore, or you could never use an American check. Sometimes we have couriers. In other words, we know someone in that country who works with us and will deliver either through PayPal or bank wire the funds with a distribution list. and they go door to door and then send us back photos and a report. So we have that happening in Latvia, parts of Ukraine, and that works out very well. I mean, in the early days when I first started this over 12 years ago, I actually sent cash in the mail because that was the only way to do it. And you have to send, if you're going to use cash in these countries, it has to be a perfect bill. It's not like here when a bill can be torn and dog-eared and written on and stamped on. They don't accept that, or they accept it for maybe 50 cents on the dollar. But if you give them a perfect, crisp bill, it's worth its face value. So we used to wrap it up really, really well and seal it really well and send cash through the mail, and we really never had a problem. One time someone said, you said you sent us, $400, but we only received $300. So that, and the envelope was kind of, you could tell it was open, So what we did was we wrote a letter to that person saying, don't worry, it's the postal delivery person, and the authorities are now watching them. And that stopped that, because people there are very afraid of authority. So we never really had problems with sending money in the mail that way, but now we don't have to, so we don't.
What would $50 get one survivor? Like I know they get more, but what would $50 actually get one survivor?
Well, it depends what they need, and most of them need medication desperately. So if you think about it, these are people who are aging in place without the benefit of any of the safety nets we have in this country for the elderly. There's no health insurance, there's no Medicare, there's no Social Security, there's no Medicaid, and there's no assisted living. And there's no prescription drug program. So if you need, a heart medication, a life-saving medication, that may cost $2.50 a pill, as you know. We can go to Costco and get it for $4, get a whole bottle. So if they need a 30-day supply of a certain pill, well, there it is.
That's the medication.
Go right to medication.
Yeah, that's there. And 100% of your donation, listener friends, goes directly into the hands of a Holocaust survivor.
Right. So if 100%. You donate $10 or $10,000, every penny of that goes right to the survivor. Now, when we go overseas, we take as much money as we possibly can so that we can, at the moment, put it right in their hands and give them money for the coming months, which is a great thing to do, because the years just melt away from all the worry and the stress that they're carrying when we give them $1,000 or more and say this is for the coming 6 months. You don't have to worry.
That's
a
king's
fortune. You don't
have to worry. That's a king's fortune.
Excuse me?
It's a king's fortune to them. It's
it is, and they're very frugal with it. And they know, because like I say, it so much of it goes to medications. So because there are people over there who are going blind from glaucoma because they can't afford the $29 eye drops, which is just criminal. It's just horrible. So we've helped people restore their eyesight through surgeries. We have an emergency fund. And get the right heart medication. So we've saved a lot of lives, and we've actually helped people recover from very grave illnesses. There's a woman who wrote to us, if I can find this letter while I'm talking to you, which was an amazing, amazing letter, because she said that, when you wrote to me, I couldn't see, and now I can. So you saved my life, and you saved my eyesight, and it was just beautiful. So that's the kind of things that they spend it on. Of course, in the winter, it's heat. A lot of these places are not heated, and they have to get heating fuel from the government, so it goes to heat. So, heat, food, and medication. The diets are still pretty bad. I mean, they still eat, mainly a diet of potatoes, so there's not, what you would imagine, vegetables. When you go there and you try to eat the same food, you gain 100 pounds because it's an entirely carbohydrate diet. There's just no leafy green vegetables. There are very few fruits, and if they grow them in the summer, then they pickle them or preserve them for the winters, if they're able to still do that,
Zane, if you're caring for an 89-year-old, 90-year-old Holocaust victim. That means they were 15, 16, 17 during the Holocaust. My question to you is this. Do you plan on keeping your mission going when the last survivor has expired?
Yes, because what's been happening with these people, and some were, you know, very young children, you know, 5, 6, mm-hmm. 3, 4, but they have vivid memories because this was so traumatic. Mm-hmm. But yes, we do, because I've always been filming them. So we go over there, or I go over there with my video camera, or I take some people with me with their video cameras, and we get their stories on video. And it's not just the talking head, like sometimes you see, you know, I was born in such and such a place. What we do is, like, for example, there's a woman in Lithuania who was a 17-year-old teenage partisan. She ran from the Vilna ghetto the day before it was liquidated into the forest to try to find the partisans and then joined up with them. And so she's about 93 now, but when she was 91, we took her in the snow, in the winter, back into that forest, and she showed us, you know, the remnants of the partisan bunkers where they lived underground and the logs and the places where they ate and the sauna that they built in the forest. And it was really, you know, absolutely amazing because these are the people who know what life was like then. And as they die off without it being put on tape or film, no one will ever know what happened in those forests, you know? So it's a wealth of information that's going to become a Holocaust educational archive for future generations, because these survivors who have gone through so much really want their stories told so that this type of thing will never happen again, as it is happening all over the world right now in different genocides.
Zane, are you aware that Joel produced a documentary?
No, I'm not. I don't think so.
Joel. I mean, this just sounds, I'm going through the website and they've got videos and little movie clips up here.
So Zane, I am a child of a Holocaust survivor, so your project is especially meaningful to me. My mother was in Slovakia, it was Czechoslovakia, then now Slovakia. I produced a film about the Italian Holocaust because my feeling always was that we heard about Hungary, we heard about Czechoslovakia. The Italian Holocaust was never heard. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to write a nice check to you and the Survivor Mitzvah Project, and I'm going to also send you a copy of Oral Mach Fry, which is the film that I produced.
It's a beautiful story. Holocaust. It's a beautiful story.
Well, that's great. Well, and send us a link, and we'll post it on our website.
That's so nice of you. Before we say thank you, Zane, give us the website. Give us any contact information. I know our listener friends are out there who want to do something.
Well, the website is survivormitzvah.org, which is survivormitzvah.org. And you can go there and click a donate button and donate by credit card or PayPal, or there's also an address there. You can send a check. But the main thing is to do something today. You know, we look around at our world and all of the demonstrations lately in our own country that have really made change. Mm-hmm. And when people stand up mm-hmm. and speak up, then change happens. And these people are really out there alone waiting for someone. We have so many more people now. We're getting more and more every day that we just don't have enough money to help all of them all the time. And that's very sad because there should be enough. So you can actually save a life by clicking, and any amount is absolutely life-saving. We try to provide, in the perfect world, each survivor with $150 a month, which is, you know, a little over $3 a day, for food, medicine, heat, and shelter, because they can't afford all three. So that's a constant decision for them. You know, do I take my medication today, or do I skip it and eat instead? Or, you know, or do I pay for my rent, or do I pay for some heat? So any amount helps. And also you can, when you donate, you get the name and the place of the survivor you're helping. And we have many pictures of them online. And we also have wonderful video clips of actors reading some of their letters. We have Ed Asner and Valerie Harper.
Oh, whoa. I am so glad you said this. I forgot to bring this up, and I've been telling myself for 2 weeks now, I must talk about this. Our friend, in quotes, Mel Gibson, seems to be donating.
Yes. That was a wonderful series of events. You know, I'm constantly on the lookout to get more celebrities involved, because celebrities bring in more people just because it's newsworthy and it gets published around the world. So I'm always looking for people who are philanthropic, who I think maybe there's a way that they might become involved, whether they're Jewish or non-Jewish. It doesn't really matter, because our donors are of all religions. And so I'm always like looking for more people from the entertainment business, especially, to read letters for us from survivors or make it public in some way. And a couple of years ago, I read an article about Mel Gibson, that he's been very actively involved with philanthropy for children at risk, especially. And I didn't know that. So I contacted him, hoping that when I told him about the Holocaust survivors who were in desperate need, he'd want to help them. And he did. And, you know, and through that relationship, I learned that he had taken the last 10 years to really get his life together, to become clean and sober, to make amends for the things that he said and did. And he really turned his life around. And the important thing about that is, you know, a mistake is a mistake, but what you do with that mistake and how you comport yourself going forward is so important. And he's helped a lot of people and saved a lot of lives, and someone I can reach out to and say, hey, I know you did a movie with this person. Do you think that you could contact them and try to get them to help as well? So that's very nice. And all the actors have been really wonderful.
Great to hear. One more time, Zane, give us the website. I will donate today. I know that listener friends will always follow the things that I do. So it's the SurvivorMitzvahProject.org.
SurvivorMitzvah.org. Just SurvivorMitzvah.org.
SurvivorMitzvah.org. Okay.
Yes.
And Mitzvah
and,
one more time.
You can save a life by making a simple click, which would be absolutely fantastic. And the main thing with this is, when people find out that there are Holocaust survivors still suffering 75 years after the war, they always say what I did. Oh, my goodness, I didn't know that. How can I help? And our big thing is to try to get the word out, because this is a finite project, and there will be a day when there are no more survivors. But right now, just to let them know they have not been forgotten means the world to them, you know, because they're still living, most of them, in hostile environments.
Well, Zane Busby, God bless you for the work that you've done. I think you are blessed for the work that you're doing. And
thanks.
What can
Thank
I
you.
Say? We haven't talked about your wonderful show business career. Do come back. We'll spend some time entertaining the audience with that part of you. In the meantime, I want to wish you a very happy holiday and good luck with the wonderful things that you're doing.
Thank you, Joel, and thank you both for supporting the project and for helping us get the word out to your listeners.